Okay, well, I guess we'll go ahead and start, and I'm very happy this select few chose to come to our session. I'm Becky Schulte. I'm the University Archivist at the University of Kansas, and this is a view of our campus in the fall with the River Valley behind campus. Lawrence is up on a hill. Most people think Kansas is very flat, but our part is not. And then I'll let Deb go ahead and introduce herself when she finds her microphone.
So I'm Deb Ludwig. I am the I'm the interim director of Scholarly Digital Initiatives because we lost our assistant dean for scholarly communication. Director of Enterprise Academic Systems, which is IT systems, the campus email, Blackboard, e-portfolios, library systems, digital library systems, quite a spectrum there, and also a librarian.
Here's our lovely copyright statement. First, we're going to talk a little bit about KU. KU is located in Lawrence, Kansas, which is on a major interstate, I-70. We're only about 60 miles from Kansas City. So if you're familiar with the central part of the United States, we're right there in the middle. KU is a state-funded institution. We've been in the business since 1866. We are a Carnegie Research One institution with doctoral programs. We have 85 academic departments, which include a law school and a med school. We have 90 research centers, laboratories, and other units. And we've recently hired a new provost who research is his key word. He, you know, brings it up all the time. We have almost 30,000 students and growing, and over 2,000, I'm sorry, faculty members. Deb and I both are part of information services. She is more on the techie part of it. I am in the special collections part of KU. I'm located in Spencer Research Library, where special collections and the Kansas Collection, which is our regional history library, is located as well. we have a vice provost for information services who reports to the provost, and then under her are networking and telecommunications, information technology, and the libraries. A little bit about the grant itself. We found out that we were getting a Getty Foundation grant, this is the archives found out, from one of their consultants that they hired who actually lives in Minneapolis. He came into the archives one day and said that he wanted to see all of our photographs and drawings and plans of campus. And I looked at him kind of in a stunned way and started asking more questions because we have over a million photographs in the university archives, and a large portion of those are of the campus. And so I started asking a few questions and found out that from this consultant from Minneapolis that KU had gotten this grant, and was a little, you know, surprised that the archives had not even been included in preparing it. But anyway, that's a different story. The Getty Foundation has funded grants for 71 different universities and colleges around the U.S. over the past 5 years. And their purpose, as you can see here, is to assist colleges and universities to manage and preserve the integrity of their significant historic building sites and landscapes. And some of the other institutions that have received this grant include UC Davis, Tuskegee, Wisconsin-Madison, and the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis. These are the three units that are now involved in KU's project. Originally, it was only design and construction management, which are the they're down as the primary investigator. That's where the project manager lives. University Archives came on board, as I said, when that consultant came to start doing his research. Our purpose is to provide the content and much of the historical knowledge about campus. And then Digital Initiatives came on board because we contacted them because we knew that our scanning station, our digital facility within Spencer could not handle the kind of scanning that was going to be needed, because some of the drawings and photographs that we have are huge panoramas that are 4 feet long, and drawings that are, you know, 4 feet by 5 feet. And we just couldn't handle that kind of a workload with our equipment. And actually, it was a great thing that we did bring in Digital Initiatives, because they added more to this project than we had initially thought they would. They've actually become a almost a project manager, in that they are helping to give a lot of structure to this program, to this project. And this is our first opportunity, really, to work together as a team. Archives has been familiar with DCM and what it does, and we've also, of course, been familiar with Digital Initiatives, but the Archives has never had a project in Digital Initiatives yet. And so we saw this as a real opportunity to get more involved. And we started working together immediately as a team. We set up weekly meetings, and DCM is the communicator with their off-site consultants, which include not only the consultant in Minneapolis, but there's also one in Topeka, Kansas, and also in Kansas City as well. A little bit about why KU got this grant. Lawrence, Kansas has, if you're not familiar with us, we're, as I said, located in the center of the United States. Lawrence is on the Oregon Trail, so it became important in the Trans-Mississippi West movement from the East Coast to the West Coast. This was in the 1840s, before Kansas was even part of the United States. After Kansas became a territory in 1854, the New England Immigrant Aid Society began to populate Lawrence, because they wanted the free state, they wanted Kansas to come into the United States as a free state when it became a state. And as a result of this, Kansas became known as Bleeding Kansas because of the border wars that occurred with Missouri, our bordering state, and us. The KU campus is quite striking. It's, as I said, it's up on a hill, so geographically it's very prominent within the Kansas River Valley. The buildings are significant. There are currently five buildings that are on the historic register of historic places. We've already lost some very important buildings, which is part of the reason why this grant is so important. Our landscaping, which you don't really usually think of as part of a campus, is has been significant. They hired their first landscape architect in 1903, and so that's always been an important part of what KU is. And then also it's a major cultural institution within this part of the country. Lawrence is not known as a cultural mecca necessarily, and so for the students coming to KU, they felt early on that it was very important that they be exposed to theater, to art, to literature, and so KU was serving that purpose. So back to the grant, we're creating a historic preservation master plan for KU, and we're looking at land use, landscape plans. We're identifying significant features to be preserved, and one of the important reasons that this is so key right now is because Lawrence and KU are growing. Lawrence and KU often have conflicts about campus borders. The city is afraid that KU is going to absorb too much, and they don't always want students living on in their neighborhoods, that kind of thing. And so there's a constant tension there. The grant itself was for $130,000. And this is kind of a recap of what we're doing. I'm going to show you next some photographs from the university archives. This is KU's campus in 1928, and you can see how busy it is. Since then, we've closed the campus, and not everybody can drive on it the way that they were able to in this time period. This is the back of that photograph. As we started compiling our metadata, we came up with this idea as a fairly simple way to communicate to our consultants who aren't located here in Lawrence some of the details that we do know about these photographs. And you can see here that it was from 1928. It's Jayhawk Boulevard, which is our main street on campus, and it's looking west from Watson Library. And you can kind of see this photograph originally came from the Alumni Association and was given to the archives. I talked about landscape features. Our consultants have been very interested in these kinds of things, benches, bird baths, the view shed, which was a term I'd never heard before, but since we're up on a hill, the view is very important. And here are a couple of students from the 60s sitting on that same bench, and you can kind of see how it's changed in 20 years. These are redbud trees, which are all over KU's campus because of a planting plan that happened in the 40s. This is just one of the maps from the 50s that notes different buildings that have been built. Here is a campus map from 1892, and this is a topographic map, so you can see the hill and the ridge portrayed on this map. And this is, this is just another one from 1904, which shows the site of the new gymnasium coming. This was an important document because it identifies where all of the different pieces of land that the first campus came from. And for the architects and the landscape people, this has been a very important part of what they're doing. Another map from 1919. This is kind of a cartoon map from 1951. You can't really see the little cartoon figures, but they're walking around playing tennis and doing other campus things. This is actually not Kansas. This is Colorado. One of our chancellors is pictured there on the right with a butterfly net. He was an entomologist, and he would take large groups of students to a group of cabins that they had in Colorado to do sample collecting and work in the field. And there are even a few ladies there in the group.
We have a building named after him.
Yes, Chancellor Snow, we do have a building named after him. And then this is the descriptive data that we have identified about this photograph. It actually came from a book called On the Hill, which is a photographic history of KU. And it was a source that is used very often. People come to the archives and say, I want that photo that's in On the Hill. and so we have to try and find it. And so keeping track of where those are is important to the archives. This is the faculty in 1890. This is the basketball team in 1906.
I thought it was the wrestling team.
Deb thought it was the wrestling team. Here is, I'm trying to remember her name. I've got it written down. But she is the physical education instructor. And there was an in-ground, underground pool in the gymnasium, Robinson Gymnasium. And these lovely ladies are the Sigma Tau Dance Society. This photo was taken in 1932. And one of the things that's significant about it is the water feature in the background is Potter's Lake, which is still on campus. And it was originally developed as a fire preventive thing. It was built on, put on campus to put out fires. But over the decades, the students started using it for recreation. They put a diving board on it. They would have little boating regattas on commencement day on the lake. They now skate on it. So it's turned from a very ordinary kind of purpose to one that's much more elevated. And you can see this as now they made it a backdrop for these lovely ladies. As I said, archives has been the linchpin here and between these two groups on campus. And part of what we've done is we decided to allow the consultants to come directly into the archives. Most of the time, its researchers use the main reading room in Spencer Library. They don't come into the archives. But for this kind of a project, which is so all-encompassing, we decided to allow them to come in, and we're able to work with them much more closely. We created the forms that travel with the materials from archives to the digitization stations, and as I said, we've scanned both sides of the photos. We create an ID number, and then we transfer the photographs to a temporary digital repository that's been set up for this project. And there was one more thing. Oh, and then DCM, once they start using the image, will add more metadata to what we have.
Okay.
Let's
talk
Deb's
about
turn.
The technology a little bit. I don't know if I can do.
Do you want me to, me to move it?
Yeah, that would be good. Not that coordinated. So one of the things that we do with our Scholarly Digital Initiatives program is that when we decide that we're going to work with somebody, when we're going to partner with somebody, we articulate a formal proposal with them. We found we didn't start working that way. We kind of worked on a handshake, and we found things got muddy. And so usually that proposal has a series of goals in it, and we share a draft of the proposal with the partner and say, this is what we understand is going to happen. This is what you understand is going to happen. And when it's all done, sometimes we sign it, sometimes, just depending on the partnership, we just agree that this is our working document. So for this proposal, we had never worked with a group called Design and Construction Management. And so we came up with these three goals: to support design and construction management with consulting, resources, standards, services, and tools as it creates a preservation master plan to guide future preservation and development on the historic campus. The second one, Becky has already talked about a little bit, to ensure that the complementary missions of technologists and content providers or curators are clearly linked and understood. And then third, to create a model project for presentation of web-based documentation, that being the documentation of this historic master plan, that can be adapted and used with other campus projects. So let's talk first about that model project. three pretty important elements in making this a model project. One is just the preservation aspect. How cool is it to have a grant for preservation of the campus and then to begin talking about also in the same breath the preservation of the digital output of that grant. So very, very cool for us. We have been working on talking about digital preservation for about 4 years now. We had a digital preservation steering committee that started about 4 years ago. And a big tenet of our program is to say for preserving digital material, you really have to move upstream to the point of content creation. You cannot do effective digital rescue. There is too much stuff out there. And so we are very much about beginning with creation, thinking about how do we preserve something. We are thoughtful. We try to be thoughtful about the kinds of repositories we use. That doesn't mean they're all trusted digital repositories, if any of you are following that. But it means that we try to not get our stuff scattered all over the place. We want to collocate materials so when the next system comes around, the next software service comes around, we can migrate things in a big group. We have about, for example, I think Luna Insight, we'll see that in a few minutes, but Luna Insight is a good example because it really does not fit. If you go through the trusted digital repository checklist, does not meet the standard for trusted digital repositories. But we've got about 50,000 images in that tool right now. We know that we have to be able to move those images forward, and so we've taken steps to be able to do that. The third is just standards that are employed. And I think I have a later slide on that. But being thoughtful about standards, a group like Design and Construction Management may not have thought about what are the best imaging standards to preserve something long-term. And so that's where we can also be very helpful. The second piece of a model project is really interoperability of tools. As we got to looking at the kind of content they were bringing to bear, it was obvious that we were going to need several kinds of tools to make this work. And you'll see that report architecture in just a minute. And then the third is reusability approach. We really try to find, here's a cookie-cutter approach to doing something that we can do again and again and again with success, so that we're not creating a lot of boutique or designer sorts of projects. Expected outcomes then were a digital report. Originally, they were just going to create a PDF file for that, and that is still one format of the digital report that will come out. And that digital report, the PDF version, will end up going into our institutional repository, which is DSpace, KU ScholarWorks. And then the other major outcome are all of these images that you just saw. And we have two kinds of images, really. Master TIFF images that get preserved in what we call our big electronic safe, which is just a server and some directory space that serves as a dark archive. No one can get to it. And then the accessible images. The other piece is an innovative, interactive digital product that will evolve over time, serving as a source for future research by faculty, staff, students. That is not necessarily preservable. That is something that's got the flash, the panache, the cool end of things. But that product will grow over time, change over time. We make no commitment to preserving that over time. And here's what the report architecture looks like, literally. When we met the first time, I drew this on the back of a napkin. And this is still pretty much what it looks like. You have an XML layer for the informational layer that will be transformed in some way. You have on the On your left, images that you just saw that end up both as access copies available through Luna Insight and then end up being preserved in the Dark Archive. On the far right, you have the output of that report will get printed to a PDF and deposited in our institutional repository. There may be some other sorts of PowerPoints that they use to engage the campus in talking about historic preservation that also get deposited into that repository. And in the middle, then, we drew this thing. There's been a pretty important project called This Week in KU History. It's a website. It's not anything that we participated in. It's actually a project of the Kansas Union. But again, using XML, you have the ability to bring in lots of different sorts of things. And so we'll probably make some links to that timeline-based project as well. What this does, then, is give us the ability, again, we talked about preservation, but also to do some of that, Rick Luce called this, I like this term, shallow infrastructure. Do some of that shallow infrastructure stuff that really gets people's attention. So already we're looking at the Google Maps JavaScript to see if we can build historic views, historic maps of our campus into the existing KU Interactive Maps, which is built on the Google stuff.
Is that the next one?
Yeah, but stay okay. Here for just a minute. The other piece of this, there's a little pink frisbee up here. It's one of the dangers I want to point out in shallow infrastructure, because we have no control over this external website. So either we have to come in and partner with them to look at some preservation of that website, or we have to accept that some stuff may break from this XML layer to this KU in History website over time. So part of the peril of not controlling everything within your web sphere of campus domain, I guess. This is what the interactive map looks like currently. This is what we have up on the KU website. This is not our product. Again, this is University Relations built this, and so we're looking at working with them to inject then some historic layers. And you can go ahead. I think most of you have seen XML, but I just threw this slide up. This is what the XML looks like for that interactive map underneath. So you've got some hierarchy. You've got building names, you've got department names that you can look up, and you could certainly put in like time periods, for example, or other kinds of details related to this project into the metadata. Image standards, again, as I said, we brought that to this project. We have had for a number of years some very stringent image standards. We learned this in a very early digital library project where we had these standards, and we worked with the anthropology department, and they brought us their digital output to put online for them, and they had thrown away their tips and kept these very low resolution JPEGs because that's what they could fit on their CD-ROM. So we really tried to emphasize with people keeping master tips, and we provide storage space up to 250 gigs at no charge to a digital partner to keep these tips safe. And we go over that sometimes if it's important to do. We've been partnering with Spencer Museum of Art. They are using these image standards, the 600 DPI, 24-bit color, uncompressed tip standard. Their images of their museum collection are at about 3 terabytes right now. The people in IT love me when I come and say, we're up to 3 terabytes. You sure you can keep backing this stuff up? And we don't have a locks system, for example. People are going to love it when we say we need locks and we need to be working with other partners around Kansas and replicating this sort of stuff. That's a real hole, I think, in our strategy right now. Metadata, one of the things that was really interesting in working with DCM is they actually did have a database to describe campus features, landscape features, buildings, and so forth. So we've been working with them to help them turn that into consistent metadata. They not only describe the bench, for example, but they will describe the season in which they're seeing that bench, or they will describe the event surrounding a landscape feature or a building feature. They'll describe the orientation of buildings, landscape zones. They have different names for landscape zones on campus, and of course, spatial data. And then we've talked about XML already. One of the things that we helped them do, we took an underlying database that we had used for metadata creation for other projects and helped them modify that for their needs. And then they put a web-based front end for data entry. Their consultants can get to this database as they're looking at images and fill out the details then to create the metadata that eventually gets loaded into Luna Insight. A little bit about this tool. One of the things I like is that they're enforcing some standard vocabulary with this. So they've got drop-down boxes to say, pick the season or pick the landscape feature here, and I think that's real helpful. We've talked about Google Maps. We've talked about metadata creation. One of the other tools that we've been supporting DCM with, Becky talked about our bringing project management to this project, but DCM also has a very strong philosopher, what would you call it, a strong...
practice?
Actually, go back. A strong practice of using project management. They have to for the kinds of things you do in design and construction management. So another tool, Luna Insight, we've talked about. The XML layer that will form the interactive report for this is being done with a product called Extensible Text Framework. It's a product of California Digital Library. We've been beta testers of that product. And then we've talked about also the dark archive already, our big electronic safe. So here's what Basecamp looks like. This is a project portfolio service that you can subscribe to. We don't have yet on campus a project portfolio system for our information services group. And so I think I pay like $13 a month for this. You can set up accounts. You can have people who are part of KU, who are not part of KU. You can upload documents. You can track milestones. The interesting thing is we used it quite a bit at first, and then as we got into, we knew where we were going, we really lapsed. So we have not used it as extensively as I thought we might based on our initial use. This is Luna Insight. Again, not a trusted digital repository, but we put the images in. They can be searched then by the consultants. The consultants can look at those images. They will then create better metadata, final metadata, and that final metadata will get joined with these images in a final repository. So this is a temporary project right now, product that we're using. And then I wanted to show you a little bit of XTF, the Extensible Text Framework. One of the first non-CDL projects that it's been used for is the Encyclopedia of Chicago. So you can see this is all transformed XML. You have images and so forth, and you can make links from those images to even reaching into the Luna Insight repository to get a larger view of the image that you can manipulate and play with and export and so forth. Just another view of what... Another view of what XTF looks like. You've got it basically an index, so this report will have an index, landscape features, buildings, and so forth, and then that'll link you to text, and that will link you to images. I've kind of talked quite a... Do you have questions about about this technology or how we're trying to pull this together?
Here's a question.
I was just wondering, what kind of database do you
use? For which part?
For either saving your metadata or saving your pure image.
Okay.
You have to have a database to see that somewhere.
The Pure Image shares the same file name, and we document the directory structure for the master image over in the dark archive. There is no database behind, at this point in time, behind the master images. The access images, then, that is where the metadata and the images join up. So those are JPEG 2000s. And that's where the metadata is kept. We can pull that out. There's an XML gateway for Luna Insight. We are pretty good at taking metadata and putting it in, pulling it out, transforming it into XML, and so forth. So
actually, the link to, I'm just imagining, mm-hmm. you know, your data, your images, all these many images, mm-hmm. file has to mm-hmm. be somewhere on your hard disk. And you, when you see, I'm a user, I search 1920, mm-hmm. whatever, the kind of map, I had in and I got, you know, this image, and this 50, thinking, you know, you have to have either a link point to that file, or you have some kind of mechanism behind.
Yeah,
roll back to Luna Insight. Actually, roll back a couple. Go back to the architecture. One of the things I don't think I explained is, if you go back here and look.
This one?
No, the drawing, the architecture drawing. Keep going. So what you have here are multiple entry points, really. Luna Insight can be an entry point all by itself.
What exactly is that Luna Insight?
Okay, go forward.
Okay.
So it's actually a product?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's
like content DM.
Well,
different,
yeah,
but different.
In
some ways, that, yeah.
Yeah, but it would fill the role of a content DM in other, or art store.
Or you can think as a content management too.
As what?
As a content management.
Manager, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
to
like
some extent.
I just need resources. I need my original file for the image. Probably the description I have in my metadata, I just input all the information I have to this Luna Insight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And whatever back end, I don't really need to care. And the Luna Insight will.
Management.
One of the things that's a little bit different about Luna Insight, technically, they now give you the ability to store the master TIFF image in connection with this system. We've decided not to do this because these images that you see here, these thumbnails, link you to JPEGs to access versions of the images, and then the TIFFs are over on a separate server. You have to have fast storage to do this. Fast storage costs about $18,000 a terabyte.
So you actually license this to.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
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 And your whatever the whole file probably sits on their site.
No. Luna Insight runs on a server on our campus. It's an image repository. It's based on an Oracle database.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Yep. And so we can go behind the scenes with SQL calls and pull out metadata and do things like that.
So the actual file actually on your server too.
Yes.
Actually, image file saved on your server.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, there for each of these, I believe there are 6 image files that get generated. So when you load data into Luna Insight, you load it from the master TIFF, and it spits off. It creates the JPEG 2000 images in various resolutions. And one of the things that we like about Luna Insight is that it gives you control. As we work with various partners, they will say, well, we don't want the world to be able to come into Luna Insight and download large high-res versions. We sell those, or we have copyright concerns or whatever. And so it's also a nice tool for letting you control what people can print, control what people can download as well. Does that make more sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Luna Insight is a commercial
product.
But originally Art Store was going to build on this and they decided not to.
So it's basically concentrate on image management.
Correct. Correct. So the XML layer sets as an umbrella over this and can pull, can take you directly into a particular image in this tool. And what you don't have here, if we were live, you can see with Luna Insight, you can zoom in. You remember the Mr. Sid stuff? Well, there are several ways you can do this, but you can manipulate an image. You can get, for a map, for example, you can get in very close to the details of that map.
So the Luna Insight also lets you do the front-end interface, right? So you have a search here, search by identifier. So when you put everything from your other slides, I think, you know, you have different fields, you put in whatever your information, and the front-end for the user will be automatically generated.
This is the front-end for this tool. But if you go to the XTF report.
Which direction is that?
That direction. This is another front end. So, and the report itself, the historic master plan for campus will actually be in this tool. And then you can actually enable, so if somebody wants to click on this image, for example, they can actually go directly to that image then within Luna Insight. So the two tools interact together. So we could also use the XML gateway too to facilitate this between Luna Insight and this XTF tool. But this is a whole separate tool.
Mm-hmm.
Is this making sense or is this really confusing?
No.
Luna Insight, the repository on campus, is divided into communities that are populated with different image collections.
There are four. There are actually four different collections in Luna Insight. There's the art and cultural heritage.
Mm-hmm.
There is the science and medicine, where this is an aside, but we've really had some interesting. We're working with our medical school. One of the collections that they wanted to put up was a professor's autopsy photos. And so we started putting those up with metadata and discovered, you wouldn't think this, but moles, tattoos, are personal
identifiers.
And so we had to take it down, visually change these images, and start reloading.
I have a question about the funding, $130,000 doesn't seem like
No,
much.
It doesn't. It does not.
Into it, and what did you do with that $130,000?
The $130,000 is held by DCM. Spencer is donating the images. We're doing the scanning for free for them. We're not charging it. My work as the archivist is in kind. I think they're using it to pay the consultants. And their project manager, I think, is also in kind. So I think they are going to be hiring some students that are going to be populating this database, filling in the metadata as the photos are identified that they want to use. And those students will be using that template that we showed you. And they'll receive some training, and so having those drop-down boxes that Deb was describing is very important, because we're not going to look to train, you know, spend a lot of time training them. They're not catalogers; they're probably architecture students.
Originally, the consultants were going to do the metadata creation, but you all know how that goes. The other piece I will say about digital initiatives time. This is really what we do. We facilitate the creation of content. So we aren't doing the work, but we are helping people do the work. We just signed a letter of intent to help build a trusted digital repository for computational linguistics data, multimodal computational linguistics data.
What's that?
We sign on to these kinds of projects with the idea that we can help you, but we are not the production facility. So we are a consulting group.
So you're scanning everything you can find in your archives that might be relevant, or are they pre-selected the content?
Right, they're selecting it. The current consultants make visits to the archives, and they are choosing the images. So far we've scanned about 200, and we're expecting that it will be about 500 by the time they're done.
The temporary repository, however, has about 700 images in it already with temporary metadata, because there were two books that you had helped to put previously.
Yeah, we scanned On the Hill, and then another book that's called Across the Years on Mount Oread. And those were projects that we had done several years ago, and with the thought that they could be used for projects like this. And so they've been really helpful, you know, towards this project, because some of those really important images were already captured in those books. You know, they years ago went through the archives and picked out the best the images then, but they could only do a few relatively to what we have.
So lessons learned.
What's our time here?
We've got about 4 minutes, 5 minutes?
We're about 4 minutes over.
Oh, we're actually over.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here's some of the lessons that we've learned. We're cooperating. We're going to be, we have this model that we've developed that we can hope we can use for future products and projects. Let's see. It's very labor intensive, as you said. DCM really didn't provide that in the grant, and luckily we were there to help them.
I think you're pretty lucky you got $130,000. We did a project with
Yeah, it's not a cheap tool. The other lessons learned from me really are scholarly content can be found in unexpected places. When people said, go talk with design and construction management about a project they want to do, I'm going, design and construction management, okay. And it's really a very, very neat project. And the other thing that we really have appreciated is having a partner that brings project management values to the table with us. So that's been a real good find. There you go.